Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
We are excited to know where we're going to be playing and excited to have a city that is excited about having us.
Once you're a Raider, you're always a Raider, no matter what city.
We are now the Las Vegas Raiders.
What's up, everyone? It's time for another episode of the Vegas Nation podcast brought to you by STN Sports Mobile, by Station Casinos, and also presented to you by Favor, drinkafavor.com. I'm your host, Heidi Fang, joined with Adam Hill, Vinny Bonsignor, and Ed Graney. We have the whole crew here ready to break down all things happening with your Raiders. We've got your fast takes and your smart coverage here, so make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening. Follow along on everything social media at Vegas Nation. Download the Vegas Nation app and head over to VegasNation.com. We're going to be weekly from now on, so check back Fridays for new episodes on Vegas Nation app or on VegasNation.com. And also, we're going to be starting up a weekly show on Cox Your View every Wednesday, so make sure to check in on your channels there locally, wherever you have Cox Your View, to find the Vegas Nation show that we'll be presenting weekly. First, let's get into the news. We're post-draft here. We had the recap. We talked about everything that had happened with the Raiders and what they've done. But as of right now, Vinny, we're up to, I believe, 94 on the roster. So the Raiders have signed a few more tight ends. They've got a couple guys on special teams and defense as well. So with some of these additions, we know about the UNLV Javon White player. He's, you know, going to be somebody that maybe could be on this team just from the Vegas side, you know, that we're talking about, and we've mentioned him already. But with some of these guys, the 94, when do you expect that this number will whittle down a little bit?
I forget what the exact date is, but you know, once you can't have more than 90 players under contract. So, you know, you gotta, let's remember that the rookies haven't signed their contracts yet. Some of these undrafted free agents have agreed to terms, but they haven't officially signed their contracts yet. So once all of that happens, once players actually do sign their contracts, then they're going to have to, you know, get to the 90 roster limits. So, but they have some time to play with because, again, with everything going on with COVID-19, players aren't in any kind of real sense of OTAs or at the building. Nobody's signed their contracts. So you have a little bit of wiggle room until then.
Well, some of the interesting names I think that come up are actually on, like, you know, special teams type players like Dominic Eberle, Leah McCullough, the long snapper. These are going to be positions that are likely contested throughout the season. So, Adam, how much do you feel like Daniel Carlson may actually be in a hot seat here?
Well, I mean, I think every position every year is going to be scrutinized and looked at. And I think as an NFL player, you kind of welcome the competition and tries to make you better. And I don't think anybody should ever go into an offseason feeling like it's their job or that they have a job or that they're not going to be pushed. And we see it every year. Last year, they brought in A.J. Cole as a punter to challenge, even though, you know, Townsend had a lot of hype coming in the year before, didn't play too well. They bring in a punter and A.J. Cole wins the job. So I think, you know, all specialists kind of realize that every year their jobs are tenuous, and we'll see how that works out. And when you talk about Javon White a minute ago, you know, former UNLV standout, a guy who has great work ethic and really has a dream of playing in the NFL, he's a guy that's going to be looking to make an impact on special teams as well. And he'll come in and certainly play, you know, some linebacker. I think they might look at him potentially being a safety as well, but really special teams is where he's going to make his mark. So the Raiders have a very strong focus on their special teams, that they believe it's very important. And, you know, a lot of teams do now in the NFL. They're one of them, and they will continue to try to make their special teams better, just like every other position.
If I could just jump in real quick, because Eberle, I think, is an interesting signing, and got a chance. I think we talked about this because, you know, ESPN has been showing so much, you know, programming, past programming, a game that they showed a lot of was the bowl game that Jordan Love played in this past season. I think it was against Toledo or somewhere, one of the MAC teams. And so I got a chance to see Eberle. He was the kicker at Utah State, and he was just booming some kicks. And I was like, wow, who's that guy? I can just remember thinking that a few weeks ago. And so interesting that the Raiders signed them. And I think they're at a point where, you know, they're no longer just closing gaping holes. We all know that the last couple of years, it's just been a complete roster reconstruction, and rightfully so. And they had massive, massive, massive needs at all kinds of positions. I think slowly but surely they've been addressing that. Now they're kind of at that point where, you know, it's closing the margins and reducing the margins as much as possible. And how do you do that? Well, one way you do it is by really being strong at special teams. I think Carlson gave them a little bit of false hope 2 years ago with how good he played. But then last year, really struggled, missing 7 kicks. And that's a position and a part of the game where it could bite you big time. So I think they're really legitimately bringing in some competition for him, because, you know, they want it to work out with him. And they've said that they think that they have faith that it will, but you can never be too sure. And Cole is a perfect example. I mean, they brought him, you know, in as a tryout basically last year. And the next thing you know, he won the job and played pretty darn well. So nobody is safe. And I think Carlson is definitely, there's a reason why they, you know, they probably paid a little bit of extra money to go get Eberle to bring him in to be serious competition for Carlson.
Interesting. So, Ed, you know, another news, Darrell Worley is signed with the Cowboys for a 1-year deal. So that was another guy out in the secondary gone. I mean, how much faith do you believe now that the Raiders have in the guys that they have drafted and the guys that are there that they're trying to bring up as a young core to the secondary, when you see a guy that's been a veteran of sorts and played with the Raiders here the last couple of years, now going off to the Cowboys, Ed?
Yeah, I'll tell you about Dallas as the resident fan. I was surprised there because, you know, they lost Byron Jones, but they drafted Diggs. You know, they drafted the kid from Tulsa, Robinson. They have a huge room there in terms of corners. But in terms of the Raiders, we've talked about it before, you know, whether it's Trayvon Mullen, Joyner's coming, moving up. I mean, Robinson they drafted, Nixon. You know, we know about the first rounder that's going to have to step up and, you know, prove he's worth it in terms of David Arnett. So there's a lot of youth and unproven nature with the corners there. Obviously, they wanted to move on from Worley. I don't know how he's going to fit into that Dallas group because there's so many of them. But I think the Raiders are excited about their young corners. They have to be. They better be when you draft them, you know, in the draft and think that they're good, especially the Arnett kid. But there's a lot to prove with the corners, obviously. I mean, they have to prove when they get on the field. And I know Adam and Vinny have said it. This is just different, man. It's different until they get on the field, but I think they're really excited because they had to upgrade, much like the Cowboys did in another team. They felt they had to upgrade their corner spot, and I'm sure in the room they think they did.
All right, so Mike Mayock's been making the rounds. I heard him in an interview with Sirius, and you mentioned Arnett there, and he was talking about, you know, people talking about that he's a reach, basically, and that they've seen other things and that they've seen that they've brought in guys that have a lot of fight in them. Vinny, how much do you feel like the Raiders, when they looked overall at the guys that they brought in, were really kind of just like, one, not just looking for their skill set, but looking to build this culture that they have with the young guys that is saying, like, you know, we're guys that are going to fight. We're going to get dirty. We're going to be the in your face kind of defense and offense, for that matter, the way that you look at the team and who that they have brought in. Like when you see a guy like Amik Robertson, who's, when I've been watching a lot of stuff with him and highlights and things, I mean, he just seems to be a guy with a lot of bark, a lot of, you know, fight in him. It's somebody that I think is going to be very aggressive after the ball. How much do you feel like this draft class, just like the past one that Mike Mayock has drafted, has really been that type of player?
Well, I think that they've gone out of their way trying to identify, you know, those type of players. And the one thing I'll give Mike Mayock credit for is that he does his homework. And it's not just film. He doesn't just hop on the phone to talk to guys. He goes and visits campus. He spends a lot of time on college campuses talking to coaches, talking to players, talking to teammates, talking to everyone that knows anything about the players that he's interested in looking at. You know, and when you're getting feedback from an Urban Meyer who talked up Damon Arnett pretty strongly, you know, about what he's capable of doing, what kind of player he is, what kind of person he is, how hard he works, And you get Urban Meyer vouching for a guy like Henry Ruggs, not just as a great wide receiver, but the hardest worker, you know, on the Alabama football team. That resonates. I mean, and the other thing is, and you know, these are relationships. He knows all these coaches. He talks about Bob Diaco, the assistant coach, the defensive coordinator at Louisiana Tech, who he got on the phone with on draft night when Amik Robertson had fallen a little bit further than even Mayock thought he was going to fall to. And he calls the defensive coordinator, who he's known for years, to find out, am I missing something about this guy? Why is he still here? Did I overlook something? And you know, when Bob Diaco, who's a very well-respected defensive coordinator, vouches for him, that resonates. And so you got to give Mayock a lot of credit for taking the extra step. And I know all general managers put the work in, and so he's no different really than anybody else. But he does do it. And so it gives you, if you're a Raiders fan, you know, a little bit of confidence that, hey, he knows, you know, has a good idea of how these players tick. And they're looking for a specific hard-nosed, feisty, good character type of football players. And you got to figure that he's at least doing the homework to figure out, you know, if those guys are along those type of lines. Are they going to be issues? Are they going to be self-starters? Are they going to care about football and love football? And so I think that they identify it, and I think that they do their research into these guys, and it seems like those are the type of players that they're uncovering, and it looks like this draft class really, you know, represents that.
I really, and I don't know if you guys saw it in last month, Ferris, I thought that was interesting. So, I actually can't wait to see him play because I don't know how true this is, but if you saw at the combine, they had Arnett run a 4.56, which would put him 32nd. I think Mayock said he ran a 4.43. That's the relation. That's a huge, huge difference. It might have been because, you know, Mayock stopped the clock at 34 yards, I don't know, instead of 40. But that's a pretty big discrepancy because we talked about, like, where was he on everyone's board? And we don't know, obviously, because you guys are talking about no one knows where he was on the boards. He could have been on a lot of boards. But 4.56 is going to be off a lot of first-round boards in a 4.43. So if they were the only one, and Mayock was quoted saying he had him at 4.43, if you watch the tape, and that thing's electronic at the scouting combine. I've actually interviewed the guy who does it several times. I'm more apt to believe the 4.56 because it just doesn't make mistakes on that. So I kind of want to see, like, when this guy's on the field, like, which one does he look like?
Yeah, I think if Mayock's watching it, with, like you said, like, if it's an old hand stopwatch, yeah, boom, boom, yeah, there is room for discrepancy there, yeah, as opposed to the way that these electronic things are done. But sometimes, you know, and I was a former runner. I used to run track. Sometimes if you get out of your block just ever so slightly and you nudge your body forward on your set and address right before you go, I don't know exactly how the digital lines go up, but let's say if you go into your, you know, they say ready, set, go. So when you're in your set position, if you push yourself just ever so slightly forward over the line with your finger or your nose or your forehead, I'm not exactly sure how the digital works, but let's say you've just hit that line before you go, like almost like a little bit of a double move on your set position. I don't know if that would be some reason for, you know, discrepancies. I'm just not sure.
On the combine, because I've written stories about this, so there's no ready, set, go. It's on first movement. Like, they, you can go whenever you want. Like, you're down in your crouch. And the, you know, the clock's on you, the system's on you, and no matter what the movement is, it starts. So, like,
yeah, but you still have to get up in the blocks, is all I was thinking.
Yeah, you decide. Well, you were a 200 meter hurdler, so this is different.
300 and 100. I was 110 high hurdles on the 300.
But in addition to all that, if you watch the tape, it doesn't look like speed is an issue with Arnett whatsoever. He doesn't look slow on the football field, and he plays in a really good conference and has played at a high level of football and produced. So, you know, I always take the 40 time with a little bit of grain of salt. And I always go back to Cooper Kupp. Who cares that he ran a 4.6? He's getting off the line of scrimmage with great footwork and great fundamentals and intelligence. And so he's making up whatever 40 time he lacks in just by being a precise, you know, footwork guy, getting off the line of scrimmage and understanding how to play the position. That's way more important, you know, than a straight line 40. And I'll even say this, you know, the Rams did some homework on him. He was hooked up with a GPS system at his Senior Bowl in 2016. And they went back and asked the people that ran that company that ran that GPS system to give him the numbers on Cooper Kupp. He was the fastest player on the football field based on actual football type stuff. When you're flying around in practice and doing those things, he was the fastest player on the football field amongst some really good football players. So it's just, there's other ways to assess it other than your 40 time. And Richard Sherman was a 4.5, 40 guy officially at the combine. So, can the guy play football or can he? Based on the tape, it looks like he can play. But, like Ed says, and I'm fully with them, he has to justify the pick now. But I wouldn't even worry about any 40 times or anything anymore. I don't care what Mike Mayock said, right? He had their time and the combine people had their time. It really doesn't matter. Can you play or can't you? And that, we're going to find out pretty soon whether he can or he can't.
Here's my only thing with 40 times in the AFC West. I think you both make great points, but you have a Tyreek Hill that is blazing fools when he comes down and just runs straight down the field. It's like you got to be able to catch up with those guys. So that's where I feel that the time does come into play in the AFC West. And Mayock has said repeatedly, this is a fast division and you got to get fast guys to keep up with it. So if it is a 4-4-3, They've done well.
The plan will never be for Damon Arnett to try to cover Tyreek Hill down the field. It'll be for him to try to stop him at the line of scrimmage. No, he's gonna. They want to physical him. I think it's pretty clear that while the Raiders have said they want to try to match the speed of the Chiefs, they've shown through their actions that they're not going to try to match the speed. That they're going to try to get more physical with them in the secondary. I think that was the goal with the direction that they went with their defensive back. So I think that will be more interesting to see what they do and try to lock him up and jam him and physical him than try to actually run with him.
I think that's exactly what they're going to do with Mullen.
I'm not sure about Damon Arnett, but I know one thing. Ruggs better be fast.
Well, yes. That's a whole – yes.
That's not a concern, I don't think.
I'm completely with you. I think offensively now that's where, because it is legit and he can play – when you watch Ruggs do other things, not just straight line speed, Mike Mayock talked about this in the, when we talked to him, getting in and out of your cuts, understanding the position. Now he's not where Jerry Jeudy is in terms of, the route running and the preciseness and understanding coverages, but those are coachable. A lot of those are coachable type situations. So he's probably going to get better in that regard, and he's no slouch. I mean, we're comparing him to Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy is like as good as it gets in that regard. Probably in a few years in the drafts, it doesn't mean Henry Ruggs is bad at it. It's just that he's not as good as Jerry Jeudy. But that's a lot of people aren't as good as Jerry Jeudy is in that regard. So he can do a lot of different things. But you're right, that speed needs to really show up because that's why they drafted him as high as they did.
Well, I can't wait for training camp to finally see some of these guys go at just maybe 75% of speed at least. But we will come back, talk about that, and discuss what the offseason could look like here. Will there be training camp in Napa? Will it be in Henderson? We'll get to that and some more of your unanswered questions next here on the Vegas Nation podcast.
They say a healthy gut means a healthy you. Favor apple cider vinegar shots bottle this feeling into the convenience of a 2-ounce shot. Better digestion, stronger immune system, and the lowering of blood sugar levels are all just some of the benefits to shooting a daily Favor shot. Their proprietary blends are raw and organic and mixed with other functional ingredients to create a better tasting experience. First-time shooters can go to drinkafavor.com.
Welcome back to the Vegas Nation podcast. It's Heidi Fang here with Vinny Bonsignor, Ed Graney, and Adam Hill. So before we get into talking about the offseason, I did want to break down some more news and find out what this means for everything being on track with the NFL season. And that being that we have heard recently that there are now a total, I believe, of 7 cases of COVID-19 at Allegiant Stadium. These workers that are out there, there's obviously this pandemic that everybody is trying to do the best that they can to be safe and to avoid hazardous conditions. The workers there have signs posted everywhere that tell them how to be safe, how to come to work, how to what mask to wear, how to sanitize everything. And everybody says that they're doing their best here to keep people away from being in situations where they could contract this virus from somebody else. But now we're up to 7 cases here at Allegiant Stadium. And Mortensen McCarthy has said that they will do everything within their power to make sure that the stadium is a safe environment. But at this stage, when we talk not just about the workers, that hopefully they all recover and get well, but just the state of things as we look down the timeline, I don't know how much more we can expect to see more cases if it gets into the double digits now. I mean, what can happen here? What do you think might happen with the stadium and the plans, Ed?
Well, there's no way there's only 7. There was 1, there was 2, there was 7. And it takes a while, as we know about the virus. Sometimes you don't feel anything, and the next day you're completely knocked out. And there's no way there's only 7. So I don't know how many there are, but Mortensen has backed off on the comments of everyone who gets it was around nobody, because that was just ignorant to say that, because there's no chance you have people out there not around people. I will believe it when I see it, though, when they shut this thing down. I think the number would have to get really, really, really high. I think the governor is been very clear that this, in his mind, is an essential business. And I'm just going to be shocked if they shut it down. I think they're full speed ahead on that. Doesn't mean it's right. But I think they're all in on this. And I'm going to be shocked if it's 7. I think there's probably more that we don't know about. And again, sometimes it takes weeks that's why people quarantine. That's why they get, they put people at home alone. We had a reporter through a few journalists, she was fine. Next day, she ran 2 miles. Next day, she was out. Rio, she did a great job explaining it in the paper. So I'm just not going to believe they're shutting it down until it really would get to a point where there'd be inherent political pressure. And I think it would have to be deep pressure for them to shut that thing down.
Vinny, have you heard any reports from any of the Raiders brass on this, or anybody that works over with the stadium, or any workers, anything of that matter?
No, other than, in talking to, Mark Davis, when I talked to him, they always reiterate how important health is. And I guess, it seems like they're doing their due diligence. That's how they find out that people, tested positive. So on one hand, it's not good news when you hear that anyone has, COVID-19, but it seems anyway, like they're being diligent on screening people and trying to keep the work space as safe as possible by making sure they understand, when people walk in, how they're feeling, and testing them and all that sort of thing. So, like Ed said, I think it would have to take some dramatic climb upward, before something really threatens to seriously close this down. And I don't think we're at that point. And so I think just like a lot of businesses that have been deemed essential, they're gonna keep plowing along.
All right, so we'll hope that everybody there recovers again, and that these workers are able to resume work when they're healthy and get back to doing what they do here at the stadium. Because the stadium, one thing it's done is it's created a lot of jobs for a lot of people. So we wish these guys well. And yeah. Again, May 15th right now, I believe, is the date where the governor says we could look at starting to reopen things here around the city. So that would be something that I think would be nice, but I don't know what the new normal will be once we see everybody start getting back to work and just how this has affected everybody here. But another thing that it has kind of put into question is how the NFL season will go forward. Will there be a preseason? Will there be training camp? Will they go on as planned? Right now we have guys in the virtual off-season programs, and I don't even know what that looks like. I don't know if any of you guys have had the opportunity to speak to anybody about how the off-season training is going, what the programs are like on Zoom. We know that different guys are doing different workouts and things like that to keep fresh. But, just what do you anticipate right now, Adam, when you look at the scope of the NFL season? Will there be a preseason? What is the stadium aspect going to look like once we start trying to resume normalcy here in this country?
I mean, it's crazy to say it, but nobody knows. Like, it's not like, there's like this plan out there and it's going to be put in place and we're just waiting for somebody to unveil it or somebody to report it or break it. It's just, it's not there. There's no firm plans. I think the NFL and their perfect scenario would have virtual offseason programs. And then by the time training camps are ready to open, second half of July, things will be back to normal enough levels that they would be able to go forward and do everything that they would normally do. I don't know that that's realistic, but that's their hope. And I think the benefit that they have is that they haven't had to make a decision, that, you know, these other leagues had to, you know, just act within hours and make this decision to shut things down and then try to figure out how to get things restarted. The NFL hasn't had to. I mean, they've had to make some adjustments in meetings and things like that and the way that they handle the pre-draft process, but they've gone forward because they haven't had to make any like real major decisions on that, and that's coming up. You know, we heard Governor Cuomo in New York asked at a press conference yesterday if he believes the Bills will be able to have their training camp in July, and his answer was, "I'll tell you at the end of June." And that's kind of, you know, that people looked at that as a cop-out answer. But at the same time, like, it tells you that there is time to make these decisions. Now, every day I think they're having meetings and discussions about what could happen or what about this or what about this scenario? Could we try this? Could we make this happen? I think those discussions are happening every day. But just they don't have to commit to anything right now. And I think they're happy that they don't.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned something like, you know, maybe the Bills don't find out until June if they can proceed with training camp as planned. Well, as far as I understand it, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, Vinny, but the policy is that if one team can't go, then none of the teams go. Is that correct? Is that what they're going forward with the mentality of everybody in training camp?
Well, they haven't said anything about training camp yet. That was for the on-field phase of OTAs, which is coming up. They're going to make a decision right around May 15th, May 16th. Once that three-week virtual classroom phase one of the program wraps up in a couple of weeks, then they're going to reassess to see if, hey, can we move forward with opening up our facilities? And in that case, it's going to be all or none. So if even one team can't open up their facility, then no teams are going to be able to open up their facilities. And I think that seems to be the expectation, that that's probably going to be what happens. Now, what they do in that circumstance in training camp, we don't know. We don't know yet. And I would think that, yes, you have time to play with, but at some point they're going to have to come up with some sort of contingency plans for teams and states that aren't as, haven't as eased up the restrictions as other states. So if you're New York and the Buffalo Bills, there's a statewide restriction still in place, then maybe they're going to have to figure out a way to go someplace else that's safer. Maybe you go to Wisconsin, maybe you go, there's a facility in West Virginia where the Saints go to each year. Maybe you go across the border to Canada. Maybe Canada has lifted some of those restrictions. But that sounds easier said than done. That's a huge operation, sending all your team, all your staff, all your coaches, getting the facilities, getting everything in order, permits, all of that type of stuff, agreements in order to pull that off. So while they have time to play with, it's coming pretty quickly. And I would think that in the meantime, they're also coming up with some sort of contingency plans, especially for these teams in states where you don't know if they're going to be open compared to other states.
Well, I just think it's fascinating what Adam and Vinny have said, because I know this is getting coverage. I don't know if it's getting enough coverage. It's a state-by-state basis. You know, colleges are really going to face this. California colleges, state schools, you know, specifically locally to UNLV in the Mountain West, there's going to be schools. Wyoming might be open. San Jose State and San Diego State might not. Now, what do you do? I mean, same with the NFL. I mean, I definitely agree. If they're not all open, you don't open anybody, because you can't have that kind of competitive advantage. And we know NFL coaches, I mean, there's no way they would even go for that if someone else was open. But it's a fascinating point specific to the NFL and Vinny said, what Vinny said is right. I'm sure there's contingency plans because they want so badly to get the season in for the TV money. But this is a fascinating thing to watch as these states decide to open up or not, and what in the world they're going to do with collegiate and NFL teams in terms of when everyone comes back and who plays and everything. I just think it has the potential to really be, this short of a mess, because you just don't know who's opening when.
I really hope Hard Knocks goes forward with their planned schedule. And like, just even if it's guys waiting, just kind of like have a different person with each guy just being like, what is going on? Because they're supposed to be doing both Los Angeles teams, the Rams and the Chargers, this season of Hard Knocks. And that, I think, would be just something that people do want to see, whether or not, you know, everything does start off on time, just to see how things are transpiring as they go on. It's going to be quite a season. But I mean, okay, so for the Raiders, obviously, we're thinking, you know, the contingency plan for them is not having the camp in Napa. I would assume it would be having it here in Henderson. And that'll be something that we can discuss as, you know, it gets closer to that time and we start to see how things are falling into place. But some of the other things that, you know, I wanted to talk about here on the show just today was some of the unanswered questions that we have with the Raiders. While training camp remains one, while some of the offseason programs remain one, this I want to focus more on the team. The quarterback position was not added to during the draft or in the undrafted free agency undrafted free agents. And then also with the D linemen, there weren't really anybody added. Adam, they didn't per se add a running back, but we do have Lynn Bowden Jr. added to the team. But when you start thinking about somebody that could really step in, should Josh Jacobs go down for the season? Of course, that's not what we want, but you know, we have to always think we're running back and the durability and somebody being able to go all 16 games and taking 20 carries a game or being the workhorse that Josh Jacobs was in his rookie year. You know, you start thinking like who can really fill his shoes should something happen to him? You know, do you think that Bowden is that guy?
Well, I think Bowden is a guy who can do a little bit of everything. And I don't think that they would look at Bowden as being able to step in as a workhorse back if something happened to Josh Jacobs right now. But I think that they would trust their rotation with Bowden, with Jalen Richard still in the mix there. Obviously, the plan is for Josh Jacobs to be a guy that they can just run out there every single week and be the man and use these other guys in just a variety of roles to pick up touches here and there and make plays. But the offseason's also not over. I mean, if they are not comfortable with that rotational mix, there's plenty of time to add guys that get cut, that get moved around. And, you know, running back has gotten to a point where in the NFL, it's looked at as a fairly easy position to replace. I mean, there's very few guys that are of an elite level that you can't replace. And I think Josh Jacobs is kind of one of those guys for the Raiders, but for the most part, it's just plug in the next guy, and you can find guys out there, and there'll be guys that are released that are more than capable of stepping in and filling a role as a running back for any team. But I think the Raiders are happy with where their mix is right now at that position.
You know, when you hear like the type of player that Bowden kind of profiles as, you're thinking, for whatever reason, I was thinking smallish. You know, Percy Harvin, who's barely 5'10", 5'9". Guys like that, scat back kind of guys. But when you look at Bowden, he's a pretty big guy. He's 6'1", you know, over close to 200 pounds, if not over 200 pounds. So while I don't think that it would be the ideal plan or the first plan to have him, if Josh Jacobs went down, be the next guy up, he definitely, from a size perspective, he's big enough to do that, you know, and big enough and strong enough to be physically an every day down kind of back. But is he good enough? That's obviously the question. But from a you know, stoutness and, you know, physical perspective, he's not a small guy by any means.
Yeah, and on that note, I was going to ask about, you know, Derek Carr. There's no quarterback that they picked up here. I think a lot of people were thinking maybe at 19 they were going to do something there, or that they would maybe with the third round with a guy like Jalen Hurts or somebody, but that didn't happen. So because that didn't happen, when you talk about, you know, the quarterback position, I mean, I think that just means that they feel very confident with Mariota as a backup and with Carr as their starter, obviously. But as we've discussed previously here, do you think that means that this is kind of all eyes are on Carr this season and what he's able to produce? And if he can't get it through, this coming year could be the season that we see the Raiders look for some young talent there.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, it's been written, it's been talked about, it's been said, this is his year. And I think we just need to, you know, let him get to camp and let him play. Look, it's going to play out one way or the other. He's either going to be good and win and probably and maybe get an extension, or he's not going to be good and they'll probably move on. There's no more guaranteed money. What you hope it doesn't become, Heidi, is in terms of the team, if you're the team, you know, the weekly narrative of, you know, is he on the line here, whatever, because here's the thing. If they start out slow or they start out losing, they finally, I think, in their minds, have a guy in the backup who's a starter in their minds. And, you know, I know, you know, it's no longer the year of just Peterman, Kaiser, Glennon behind him. They now have a guy at two, which is much easier to put in there if Derek Carr doesn't win. But, you know, there's no question this is his chance to step up. He has a good offense. And then I think you just let it play out, because at the end of the year, it's going one way or the other. I don't think they'd want a narrative of 16 straight weeks of, is his job on the line? I think everyone kind of knows that. So you let him play it out. You let him see how he does if there is a season. And then at the end of the year, his play will determine what they do with him.
Let's go ahead and get into the defense here, because I think that that was another question that I think a lot of people thought maybe they would go for depth here on the defensive line. But they did, again, address that during free agency. And they've brought in a lot of pieces there that are likely to be somebody that can play into depth. Vinny, when you look over just the lack thereof of additions on defense, because even with the undrafted period here with guys and free agents that were undrafted, they didn't really bring in anybody. Well, they did actually bring in Mike Penizek. I'm probably butchering his name, from Michigan State. They brought in a defensive tackle there. So, I mean, do you think the Raiders right now are at all concerned with their front four?
Well, I mean, they've spent a lot of time addressing their front four. You know, there's first round picks along the front line. Obviously, Max Crosby, a fourth round pick, who played really well last year. They brought in Malik Collins as a free agent, who, you know, statistically was better than any of their interior defensive linemen last year in terms of sacks and pressures and quarterback hits. They bring in, you know, Carl Nassib, a reserve defensive end who can play, you know, out of a stance, in a stance, has shown that he can get after the quarterback. So I think they've, over the last couple of years and in this free agency, they dealt with, you know, defensive line, and it's allowed them to move to other positions on defense in free agency. When you're talking about linebackers, the cornerbacks that they've brought in. So, you know, we sometimes get trapped into looking at things kind of in a vacuum or just in the present tense. When you go back last year and the year before, there were draft picks that were put into certain positions. There was money spent in certain positions, and you keep checking off all the boxes and all the checklists, the to-do lists, and you finally get to a point where, okay, we're a pretty good football team here. We've filled, you know, as many holes as we possibly can. Now let's, you know, get out there and start winning some football games. And I think the Raiders are closing in on that point.
Ed, do you think that the Raiders right now with their D-line, that they're comfortable with where they are?
Yeah, I think that's actually, I mean, I still think they probably are hoping the corner's better, but I think they did well. I think Malik Collins is an upgrade. I think they got better in the middle. Cleveland Farrell is going to be, I think Carl Nassib is really going to, we talk about Carr, but Cleveland Farrell is another guy. You got to go one way or the other here. And I think having Nassib behind him is going to push in that way. Now, Max Crosby's got to get better because he's no longer a secret. So, you know, you don't know what they're going to do with Max Crosby this year if you're on the other end of the line. It's hard to come back next year after everyone has film on you. They know you a little better. I think they're better up the middle. Hankins, I mean, will RDT come back and have to be the player they want him to be? So if all the defensive positions, although Littleton and McCaffrey adds more at linebacker, I'd be more kind of positive about the defensive line in some of the additions. I'd still be a little worried on the back end until those young guys prove themselves. But that's one of the positions in defensive line I thought they did pretty well.
Would you trade for Yannick Ngakoue?
Well,
yes.
What do you have to give up?
Would you give up your second round pick next year?
Oh, yeah. Now.
What about your first round pick?
No.
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 Okay. Because I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that the door is completely closed on that. I mean, that's not going anywhere with him in Jacksonville. I can tell you that right now. So, you know, unless they want a poisoned locker room or more poison than it's been, they're probably going to move on from him. And the Raiders showed interest. There's no doubt that they were interested in potentially, you know, trading for him. But they weren't willing to meet the price at that particular time, which was before the draft. Now that that's all said and done and you can start looking at futures, you know, that could be revisited.
That'll do it here for the Vegas Nation podcast. We hope we answered some of your unanswered questions, but we'll be back next week with another episode bringing you up to date on all things happening with your Raiders. So don't forget to subscribe wherever you are listening, as well as check out the show that we're going to have on Cox Your View coming up on Wednesday. There'll be a new Vegas Nation show that'll be airing there. And make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening. Follow us wherever you are on social media at Vegas Nation. Download the Vegas Nation app and head over to VegasNation.com to find all of the content that we are putting out there. We have articles, we have videos, we have everything that you want to keep up with your Raiders. So that'll do it for us. For Vinny Bonsignor, for Ed Graney, for Adam Hill, I'm Heidi Fang. Thank you so much for listening.